Aloha, everybody. This is Jeff Reinbold. We're back with this week's edition of the Jeff Reinbold Show. Going to talk a little bit of NFL draft offensive players that I think have a chance to go in the first round. Now, that doesn't mean they're going to go in the first round. It just means they're guys who are graded high enough to potentially be first-round picks. But, Michael, before we get to that point, let's talk about more international news, and I mean big international news. We're going to have the Green Bay Packers, a team that everybody said would never play outside of Wisconsin, going to Brazil to open the season next year against the Philadelphia Eagles.
I'm going to take 10 seconds and just let people know in Ireland that I announced it, or we announced the tour last night. Not you, Jeff. You'll come soon. All the details are on social media. One of them includes a night in Kerry in the Great Southern Hotel with Paddy Clifford on 350 people on the 13th of August. Neil, Jason, Phoebe are on different dates. You can check it out now. It goes in general sale on Monday. And Jeff, I'm annoying you with this, but what I will say is if you're on Sky, and hopefully when you're on Sky next year, we will look at doing a short-term build-up for a couple of events over here. So definitely, you've got my word that I will try that. And do check it out, folks. We're going to be in across Limerick, Killarney, Derry and Dublin in the first couple of weeks in August, getting ready for the NFL season. Can't wait to show Jason Bell Derry's walls, Jeff. And then you might come up there eventually, you know. But he's basically from Derry, so I have to bring him up, you know.
Hey, I'm going to tell you something. You guys, that was, as they say in the business, Michael, that was a shameless plug. So great shot getting that in.
I have to do it.
I love it. You got to pay the rent. Everybody's got to pay the rent.
And we will have you over at some point. Like if you're in the UK and you're on TV, it makes it a lot easier, and it will happen. You've got my word on that. And I know we've talked that off camera as well, for people listening wondering. I did let people know that there's not going to be much else happening this year, but if Jeff is in the UK, we will make it happen. Even if it's a week or two's notice, we will make it happen. So, yes, Jeff, when you said big international news and you're saying that, I think, oh my God, is he flying over here? It's not. It's the Packers going to Brazil. Friday Night Lights. While I ask Siri, what time is it in Brazil, even though it doesn't work on my phone, I'm wondering, is that like good for us time difference-wise? I feel like it is for us. I feel like, so for example, we're recording this right now, Jeff, right? At like 11 o'clock Irish UK time, and it's currently 6:53, so there's a 4-hour time difference. That's not good, actually. I thought it was going to be like a prime time game in Europe. Why did I think Brazil had a 2-hour time difference? Anyway, different conversation. The Packers going to Brazil is a great option, but I feel like, I'm not sure, Jeff, if you've seen, because I know you're getting all young, down and lean and hip with the youngsters and TikTok. I'm not sure if you've seen a guy called Jay Lawrence, who works with Absolute Radio Talk Sport. He does a lot of TikToks, and he done a TikTok today on how he feels that UK, Irish, European fans might be a wee bit gutted, because firstly, they're not coming to London or to Germany, especially in a year where you had the Minnesota Vikings and the Bears. I agree with him, but I would say it would be very unlikely to see an NFC North matchup like that in London or internationally. Jeff, I love the game. I love the matchup. I love week one. The only question I have for you, my friend, is how do I persuade my wife / employer to go to Sao Paulo for the first week of September? Have you any ideas?
I think you got no shot, to be honest. I don't think that's happening.
I can make it happen.
How about you talk about shameless plugs, and I got to go to my agent, Paul Sheehy, who also represents the only Brazilian player.
Oh, thank God. I thought you were giving away a massive surprise there. You're talking about Cairo Santos, yeah?
Cairo Santos, the kicker, is Paul, one of Paul's clients. And Paul today tweeted out, you know, awesome to see this, but the NFL had a win-win when they could have brought Cairo Santos, the only Brazilian player in the National Football League at this time, back home to Brazil. So again, this show is getting peppered with information.
A shout out to Paul Sheehy, the GOAT. And you know very well he's the GOAT, Jeff. I was chatting to Charlie the other day just over a coffee, and he was telling me how much he respects the hell out of Paul for what he done for him. And I think a lot of players speak very highly of him. And he's right. But I get, from a marketing viewpoint, the number one supported team in the league in Brazil is the Green Bay Packers. And I get the matchup. And it's not as if like it's obvious with the 8-game situation from 2025, you would presume that Brazil's gonna get a matchup, hopefully at least every year or every couple of years. I wonder, and I'm not being negative about it, I wonder, is that stadium the best stadium to have the games? Clearly, obviously the NFL know more than me and I trust them. I've seen people talk about it's more of a soccer stadium, so I'm interested to see. Talking about that 8-game commitment in term or up to 8 games a year internationally, Jeff, just very quickly as we stay in international news, Steelers have a kicking clinic here on Tuesday and a couple of events next week. And I have to plug the Jaguars. Jaguars are making the draft pick in Ireland in 2 weeks. So big up to them. Big up to the Jets as well. Jeff, it's a bit of a mad time, lad. What's your thoughts on this Eagles Packers situation? I mean,
I
like,
think
for a neutral, Jeff, it's incredible.
Obviously, it's fantastic for football in Brazil. And you have to understand, football in Brazil is exploded in the last 20 years. And where there once was no game, now there is, it's an interesting brand of football. They actually play on the beach in Rio. And but the appetite for the game has grown incredible around the country. And as you said, the Packers are the number one favorite team. So they're bringing the club favorite or the city, country's favorite team in. You got the Eagles with all of the personalities that the Eagles have and the profile that the Eagles will bring. I think it's a great matchup, great way to start the NFL season. It's on Friday night. I think there's just a lot of really cool things about it. The NFL never fails us, Mike. They just continue to find ways to build the game, to take the game to new venues, take the game to new countries, take the game to new days on the calendar. And, I think it's a win-win again for football internationally.
I love the matchup. Obviously, from an international viewpoint, I've got blurry vision because I'm biased towards it. I have seen some Green Bay fans today and some Eagles fans sort of complain that that was the one game they wanted to go see in the States. It is what it is. I mean, it's an extra game for Philadelphia. They have chosen to play the game internationally, and it's their call to do that. And I like the move for the Packers. I guess from a biased viewpoint, I would wonder, is this going to be the last time we see Green Bay internationally for a few years? We've seen them go as a home team to London, and that was their commitment over an 8-year period. And now it's you're sort of thinking this could be the end for a while. But I just feel privileged the fact that I got to see them there. Yes, you're quite right. It could be very unlikely that Mick gets to go to São Paulo, but who knows, Jeff? Watch this space, my man. I think the Friday night thing's a bit off. I would like a Saturday night. I think Saturday. I know college football. It's a non-starter. But high school football as well, Jeff. That's controversial.
There is nothing that displaces the king. And the king is the National Football League. Not baseball, not soccer, not
But college football,
basketball,
Jeff.
not college football, not high school football. Nothing displaces the king, right? And college football might come closest, but we just had the NCAA basketball tournament, right? And it's big for the month of March. The rest of the year, unless you follow one of the teams, you really don't care very much about it. The National Football League, Michael, every time they play is a spectacle. And every time they play, huge amounts of money are bet on the games, all of it, right? And the NFL understands that. They're competitive. It's a business, right? It is a hard-nosed business. And anytime you have an opportunity to expand your reach, you have to do it. That's the responsibility, of the commissioner to make sure that the NFL continues to grow that huge, huge surplus of money that they make every year. And the players love it because why? The more money the league makes, the bigger cut they get. So we just watched the salary cap jump this year to unprecedented numbers. And by taking more games internationally, all we're going to do is watch those same things happen again and again and again.
Or as I say,
But I think, again, it's interesting that, for example, you expressed displeasure with the fact that they're playing on Friday night. You'd rather have them out on Saturday. Isn't it amazing how easily we get spoiled, right? Where internationally, if you think back, Mike, what was it, 10 years ago, 15 years ago? The first international game happened, and everybody was overjoyed. And then the next couple, it's like, well, why can't we have one here? Or what? It's just like, this game is so popular. And the reason people complain about those things is because the game is so popular. Everybody wants it. Everybody wants it when they want it. And the NFL recognizes that and just keeps getting more in front of the consumers.
As they say in Brazil, mucho dinero, big money. I agree. I mean, look, it's one of those things where for anyone listening to this, we're usually very lucky that we get to have an idea of what's going on in Europe, maybe a few hours before it's announced, so we can get stuff ready. Like, it's not so we can book flights or hotels. It's so we can get stuff ready ahead of time so people can understand and get good content to their location. This came out of nowhere, lad. I looked at my phone and went, what? So fair play then for keeping it a secret. I love the matchup.
The NFL's tired of you breaking stories. They can't have you breaking stories like you're breaking stories now.
I have to give a very quick shout out to, and you know who he is. I want to see if he's listening to this. Ginger Bap, Dara Carger. He's like the Irish Ian Rappaport. Dara's a massive Packers fan. And he was in Belfast a few weeks ago. We're up some draft content coming out the next few weeks. And he was saying that if there was one thing he could go to in the next 2 years, it would be that game in Brazil. And he was also talking about how crazy it was that you were just sitting at our table chilling out in Vegas. He couldn't believe it. I think he was starstruck. Anywho, love the game. Give us your week one prediction. Who wins that game straight up, Jeff?
I think the Packers are going to be a really good football team. And I think the Eagles are going to be good. The Eagles are going to be a team in transition. They've had a lot of changes on the coaching staff, a lot of changes in personnel. Kelsey's now is gone. I think it's going to be they're still going to win the East. That's in my opinion. They're still going to win the NFC East. But I do think that Green Bay is primed to have a great season. And you look at what that young quarterback did over the course of the season and how well they were playing at the end and the defense started to play. And I think they've gone out and proved themselves in the offseason. So I think Packers will win that game.
I'm going to just quickly swerve on a couple of things because it's been busy, Jeff. Like, we're organizing tour stuff. We're down in Cork this weekend. Needles over last weekend. I'm trying to get ready for the draft. I know you're very busy in Hawaii, so we haven't talked that much. You mentioned the Final Four. Shout out Caitlin Clark. She's class, man. Do you see any of that the weekend? I miss Jim Nance all the same. I know. I watched the men's one as well, but she's unreal.
What a tremendous talent. I mean, you know, and what she's done to elevate the women's game and the profile of the women's game. I mean, you were talking about a true, true personality. I mean, somebody that has star power and, you know, star power the way Larry Bird did, the way Michael Jordan did, the way, you know, Kobe Bryant did. That's, you know, and they elevated their game, and she certainly has done the same for women's basketball. And I can, you know, a big shout out to her. But an even bigger shout out to the University of South Carolina, who won the national championship and played extremely well, played hard. You know, it was great to watch the women play at the highest level in the playoffs. And I thought actually the women's tournament was better than the men's tournament.
Interesting. I agree, because I'll say this very quickly. What she's done, yes, it's elevating over here, but it seems to have just elevated to a different level over there, and she's just so great to watch. So long may I continue. You could almost put her up with Steph Curry, man.
Well, I don't think there's any question. And, you know, you're going to see more women. She's a trailblazer, Mike. She's elevated the game, elevated the, you know, what a woman is, you know, seen as capable of doing on the court. I tell you what, when they won the game to go to the, you know, to the championship game, she absolutely rained 3-point shots. And I mean, her shooting stroke is so nice and so natural. And, you know, I thought, you know, to do that in a pressure situation at the highest level, you know, what a performance. And she just kept doing it and certainly put Iowa basketball on the map, Iowa women's basketball on the map. And it's amazing, you know, how one pro player, one personality can do that. Wouldn't that be something if Charlie Smith is the guy that does that in Ireland with American football? Because he's got the personality. I've watched the interviews. I've watched the, you know, the show that he was on, the late night show that he was on. The guy handles himself extremely well with the media. You know, Paul will, I'm sure, get him multiple opportunities to, if he's successful, to, you know, to be in the media like he's done with all of his clients. And, you know, we'll see. But I think that's kind of exciting times for certainly for Charlie Smith and for football in Ireland.
You know, he hates seafood and he's going in the Orleans.
There's plenty of good. Charlie, don't worry about seafood because there's plenty of good food in New Orleans. If you make it, you're going to have enough money to import food you want.
He flies out on Sunday. All the best, Charlie. And again, yeah, echo what you're saying, Jeff. Let's talk a couple of quarterbacks in this draft class in a little second. I'm going to have a bit of fun over the next few weeks, Jeff, and just shamelessly plug many things. First one, Aer Lingus College Football Classic this August, Georgia Tech, FSU. We seen Notre Dame against Navy in August last year, and to look at a guy, an offensive tackle that played for Notre Dame, his dad played for the Kansas City Chiefs. He's in the Chiefs Hall of Fame, two-time Pro Bowler Joe Wild. His son, Joe Wild, is expected, you believe, Jeff, to be one of the highest drafted players in his position in this draft. What have you seen of him with Notre Dame over the last year, especially to indicate that?
Well, Mike, you know, the thing that when you look at an offensive tackle, first of all, you're looking for the physical dimensions for the position. And this kid has all of that. He is long. He's, you know, I don't know what he actually measured at the combine, but it's above 6'5". He's got not just tall, he's got long arms. He can bend. He's got good feet. He's tenacious. He's a very intelligent player. And he's been very, very well coached at Notre Dame. So he comes to me maybe the most pro-ready of that tackle class. And now let me just say this. That tackle class, in addition to Joe Wall, has some really talented players. And I have, in the tackle position alone, on my board, I have six guys who I feel are good enough, have demonstrated a high enough grade to be first-round draft choices. You know, now, that's not going to happen when you got 32 picks. You're not going to get six tackles drafted in the first round. But I would tell you, if four of them got drafted in the first round, I would not be surprised. And, you know, Talesi Fuanga at Oregon State, really talented kid, going to be a right tackle in the NFL, but I think should be a day one starter. Troy Fatanau of Washington, University of Washington, again, very much the same way. There's a kid named Fashan at Penn State who, when you look at him, it's almost like, okay, God decided I'm going to design a left tackle. Right. In our business, we say he's a pretty athlete. Right. Well, this kid is every bit that. He's beautiful. He's not pretty. He's beautiful. He has incredible length, has the ability to bend, great feet, all of the things that you're looking for. So, you know, and then there's a couple kids in the SEC who are going to be fringe first round picks. So I think we could see four tackles go in the first round. If you're a team, and, you know, this is great for the fans because the fans know their teams extremely well. If your team needs a tackle, then this is a great time to take one, particularly if you got two first-round picks, because you can get a skilled guy early and then come back and get one of these tackles. And I'm going to tell you something, Mike. You know, we talk about how the draft is not a exact science. I was watching tape. I've been breaking down, some tape. And I was watching Neil from the Giants, their big right tackle, first rounder. Man, is that a miss? I mean, that is a bad miss. He struggles. He's going to if Neil's going to make it in the National Football League and be a legitimate starter, they're going to have to get him inside and play him at guard where he just doesn't have the feet to play tackle. And you know, once you've demonstrated that you struggle with something, you're going to get it every week. And I went through every sack in the National Football League on tape. And when people, it doesn't matter who it is, whether it's Dallas, and I mean Dallas just absolutely destroyed the Giants up front. I mean, whether it's the Giants or anybody, as soon as they see there's a weakness, they're going to go after it. And they put guys outside of him, and he just could not handle the speed rusher. So that's why I say it's not a exact science, but certainly I think any of these six guys that I have could go in the first round. The other position, Mike, where there's a lot of depth and a lot of controversy too, is quarterback. And always, always more quarterbacks are drafted in the first round than should be, right? And, you know, that's just
who are you going to start with? I mean, I feel like I need to hear your thoughts on Caleb Williams, because whenever we were in Belfast, we were having a conversation around the fact that, okay, he's projected probably to be the highest pick in the draft. But you see, Jeff, you know, year upon year, you mentioned Evan Neal there. Now, you can always make a decision that you might end up regretting. Look at the Carolina Panthers last year. But the reality is nobody's seen that coming in regards to what happened in Houston, what happened in Carolina. As of right now, we're 2 weeks out from the draft tonight at the time of recording. Caleb Williams will probably go number one to the Bears. But how successful do you think, from what you've seen in his college career, he could be in the NFL?
Well, Mike, so much of it is fit and what they put around you. Like I said, doing this study that I'm doing right now, it's really interesting because you get a chance to watch over and over and over the NFL, the five views of an NFL play that you get, right? And I'm watching Justin Fields, and Justin Fields struggled in Chicago, and part of it was the offensive line's not very good. Part of it was the scheme, the protection scheme was not very good. And part of it was, it became really evident as you watch the tape that he struggled to know where to go with the ball, particularly where to go with the ball quickly. And so oftentimes he ended up holding on to the ball too long. And now when you create all those, you know, put that all together, and what you get is a quarterback who fails, right? He was a first round pick. Now they're going to trade him out and get another guy in, right? And if they don't get what ails them around the quarterback, then Caleb Williams might be the next one. Now, if they can fix it, and I think they've made some moves in the offseason to fix it, right? They've brought in some guys that should be able to help him. But again, offensively, in the offensive line, they've got to get better. And, you know, Caleb Williams can make a ton of plays. He's a dynamic athlete. He's got a big arm. You know, he's got all the tools. Here's what I think has happened in the league. How the league runs so much in cycles, right? And so Patrick Mahomes comes into the league and becomes the guy, right? He becomes the blueprint, if you will, for success at the quarterback position, because his team has won the Super Bowl 3 of the last 4 years, right? And he's been able to put his team on his back and, you know, take it to the promised land. I mean, they were average at receiver last year, right? Kelsey's on the downside of his career, and yet still they were able to get to the Super Bowl and win. There are a lot of factors, not just Patrick Mahomes, but the reality of it is everybody says, that's what I want. I want one of those, right? So now we go out, and everybody that can run around and make a play, everybody says, well, he's going to be the next Mahomes, right? There's a problem in that, okay? Just like every short white kid that played slot receiver was going to be the next Wes Welker. There was one Wes Welker, and you can maybe say 1B with Cole Beasley. You understand what I'm saying? So you got to be really cautious about that. There are some... You know, there are some, you can call them red flags or whatever about Caleb Williams. You can talk about his maturity. You can talk, you know, there's, can you make some of the plays that he makes against NFL players? No, he's going to have to adjust his game. Now, what I don't know about Caleb Williams, and what I don't think anybody can know about Caleb Williams unless they sit down in the meeting room with him and go through tape and, you know, what are his work habits? What are his study habits? How much football can he process? All of those things. That's what those, you know, top 30 visits are for. That's what those pro day workouts, Mike, have become a dog and pony show. They really have. There's nobody rushing you. You don't have to read anything, right? And now they want what's become the big deal, right? This is what I'm saying. You got to understand the business, right? The NFL wants footage of what? They don't want footage of a guy going back there and going through a progression because nobody understands it. But what they want is splash footage where they can take the guy out of the pocket, run him around, spin him around, have him throw behind his back or whatever, throw it 60 yards downfield across the field, right? Which he may do, which he might do five times in a season, right? But that's not sexy, right? You understand what I'm saying? So we sometimes look at that stuff and go, wow, look at that throw that guy made. Like, I can't remember. So there was somebody last year hit the top of the building with his throw, right? I'm going to tell you a story. Brett Favre in Atlanta as a rookie, right? He didn't even know what a nickelback was. Didn't know who a nickel was. That's how he came to the NFL. But he had incredible arm talent. So you know what he did his whole year at Atlanta? He was the third quarterback. You know what he did? When they would go into a stadium for a walkthrough the day before the game, which they used to do, they would have a contest to see if Favre could throw it into the upper deck. That was his role for the team, right? Because he needed to learn the game. He needed to learn how to play. He was incredibly talented. But now these guys, and I'm not saying that's going to be Caleb Williams. What I'm saying is now these guys come into the league, and because they're first round picks, and they got to play right now. They got to be the savior right now. Is Bryce Young going to be the savior in Carolina? I don't know. You don't know. Nobody knows. But this, you got to make it. You got to be that guy right now. If you had judged Brett Favre by that, he wouldn't be playing. He would have never played.
And that's the difference, I think, from the NFL where it was maybe 15 years ago to now. It's become so unforgiving that you don't see progression. For example, you know, Bryce Young should be given another 2 years in this team to really see if he is the player that they can be. And the reason that they picked him first in this draft, there's many reasons why Justin Fields didn't work out in Chicago. Personally, I don't think they should have moved on from him. I think they should have continued to give him a chance. He enjoyed playing there. The fans liked him. It was part of a slow rebuild. And you see now, Jeff, with this whole situation with Caleb Williams, especially Caleb Williams, not Wick. You don't see as much controversy with the rest of the quarterback class as you see with Caleb Williams. And it just makes me think, like, it almost puts me off the draft cycle a little bit because you start to see people being negative and it's like, there's 4.5 months to the ball's thrown here. Draft him. Let him buy this time. But then the media and certain other sections are like trying to get little snippets of content, little different things. A bit like what you said there about the big plays. They want quotes, they want things to talk about. Stephen A. Smith needs something to talk about for the entire summer. I get that, but I think this year it's been overdrive. And sort of goes into the whole...
system is built for the guy not to succeed. Think about it. Every year, what do? We take away more time that the players can spend in the offseason with the coaches. We take away preseason games. We take away OTA days. We take away, you know, the ability to have one-on-ones and just even one-on-ones in practice, right? Because the rules are so strict, Michael, that during parts of the offseason program, you cannot have two players even walking towards each other, right? So how does a quarterback who's going to come out of college football where he's going to see maybe 5 or 6 coverages a game, get to the National Football League where the defense on the other side of the field puts in 30 coverages a day. And you expect him to go out there and perform at a high level against the best players on earth? It's incredible that these guys can do it, right?
Yeah.
Any of them have success early in their careers, right? And then on top of it, you look at the system that guy's going to be in. How quarterback friendly is that system, right? Now, I'm a big Brock Purdy fan, but you know what? who's to say that Justin Fields wouldn't have just as much success as Brock Purdy had, had he played in a system that was, you know, better players around him and a more quarterback friendly system? We don't never know that, right? But I do think that we got to really be cautious. These quarterbacks right here, Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, Drake May, Michael Penix, J.J. McCarthy, Bo Nix, somebody is could take all of those guys in the first round. Now, I've seen all the stuff where it's quarterbacks are going to go in the first five. Quarterbacks are going to go in the first four. First of all, that's never happened, and I don't think it will this year either, right? But I do think that when you look at those guys, Jaden Daniels, the Heisman Trophy winner, not very big, right? Okay. How many little quarterbacks have won the Super Bowl? Not very many, right? Drake May at North Carolina. So you see some great throws, and then you see some real stuff, right? You know, Michael Penix, talented. You saw the arm talent. You see the competitiveness. Bad injury history. So every one of these guys, J.J. McCarthy.
Right? That's the one I want to talk about. Like, sorry, go ahead. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And J.J. McCarthy has enough arm. What I don't know if J.J. McCarthy has enough is if he goes to a bad team, right? He was playing at Michigan with a team that sent 18 players. Now, think about this. Michigan sent 18 players to the combine. That was the team that he was playing. And you can downgrade him as okay, well, he must be just a game manager. Or you can look at it and say, okay, now, what's he going to do when he doesn't have the best talent around him? Is he good enough? That's the decision you got to make.
And a lot of the talk over the last few weeks, you're talking about J.J. McCarthy, it's a guy I wanted to zone in to in the last 5-10 minutes of this podcast, is he was expected to sort of go sort of a fringe quarterback in regards to some of the guys you mentioned there, and he started to creep up in recent weeks and months. Obviously won the national championship in Michigan, and I forgot, Jeff, that you went to the Big House at one point. My apologies, my bad. I'm sure that was a very memorable experience to go there and to see those guys play. But for J.J. McCarthy, the Commanders is a really intriguing position at number two, because their GM, if people aren't aware, Adam Peters was the assistant GM the year that the Niners shocked everybody and went for Trey Lance. So I'm really intrigued to see, do they pick him up at two?
And I think it's going to be really interesting to see, because that place, like I said, Mike, the study I just did, you get a feel for every one of the offenses in the NFL. I mean, a real feel, right? Because I've spent hours and hours and hours watching film. And I'm going to say there are two things that struck me the most. Number one, whatever the Giants are paying Daniel Jones, it is not enough money to play behind that offensive line in that scheme. I wouldn't play. He's at risk every time the ball snapped, right? Sam Howell had no chance most of last year because they can't protect him. They cannot protect him, and they didn't play in systems, or the guy didn't know, one of the two, where to go with the ball quickly, because they look confused. They look like there was no answer, right? And Sam Howell competed his tail off, but he had no chance. And I'm afraid, and when you look at Sam Howell and J.J. McCarthy, Sam Howell has had demonstrated escapability and athleticism in the pocket and all that stuff. McCarthy has not had to yet. But if he goes to Washington, we'll find out real fast whether he can escape the rush or not, because he's going to get bodies around him.
Well, last week on this said podcast, you were the biggest Washington Commanders fan in the world, Jeff. And I can only imagine you put J.J. in there. And it's a tale of two halves. In that division, in the NFC East, it's so open, man, at the minute, because there's so many question marks going on. But no matter how we feel about that Commanders team, and I agree, I know we've watched a lot of tape. I know you have. But the rebuild, what is going on in Washington, is really intriguing. And I know a lot of that tape will be quite repetitive in terms of what's going to happen, especially at the start of next season. But you wonder if he goes in there and learns that system over the next few months, could he succeed quickly there. I'm really intrigued to see it.
I'll go back to our last pod that we talked about the Commanders, right? And I really don't have any skin in the game. I'm not a Commanders fan, but I'm impressed with what the new GM and Dan Quinn have done. Because when you look out, they spent over $100 million in free agency, right? They had the most cap space of anybody to spend. So they went out and they spent, and they got some older players who still have enough on the, you know, enough tread on the tires that they're going to help them. So by taking that huge group of free agents that they took, they really helped themselves in the draft. So now they can draft, you know, you either draft for need, position need, or you draft for best player available. The ideal situation is draft for best player available. The Commanders have given themselves a chance now to draft somewhat from best player available. I don't think, you know, and there was talk, Mike, about they have offered Chicago the second pick and another pick next year, and I think another one the next year, first rounders, for the right to take the number one pick in the draft. And that's got to be Caleb Williams, because Caleb Williams comes from that area of the country. He's a DC kid, right? And the Bears have said no thank you right now, right? Because they covet that first pick. I don't think overdrafting a quarterback with the second pick makes sense to me. It really, really doesn't. You know, unless there's another guy that's that close. And to me, Jaden Daniels isn't, and JJ McCarthy isn't. I think they're better football players, better guys that will have better NFL careers than those guys at the second pick. Remember, we talked about this in the past.
Yep.
If you are drafting in the first round, you want a gold jacket guy, right? You want a gold jacket guy. You want a guy who's going to be in the Hall of Fame one day. Do I think J.J. McCarthy is going to be the next Tom Brady? No. And again, I like J.J. McCarthy. But again, to say that because he went to Michigan and he had great success and was 27-1 or whatever he was as a starter, and they won the national championship, that's going to translate to success in the pros, that's not realistic. Now, he may be a great player. I can't tell you that. But I wouldn't draft a guy with the second pick in the draft that I had, unless I had more feeling that that guy was going to be an Hall of Fame player.
Jeff, just to round up this weekend, I've really enjoyed your content. I think a lot of people in Europe will really enjoy what you've said there, just in regards to those two players in general. And you're starting to convince me about doing the draft live. This sort of talk, I have to put it out there and say it.
Mike, I'm telling you, it is the greatest. I enjoy the draft more than I enjoy the Super Bowl, to be very, very honest with you. Number one, and here's why. Number one, every team gets to participate, right? Now, the Super Bowl is the greatest spectacle in sport, right? But the draft is when every team has a chance to improve itself. Right. And so to me, the draft is must watch TV. Excuse me.
Are we doing it then? Yeah. Can you get time off work to do it?
We'll do it. You can bet we'll do it.
Leave it with me. Two things. I'm driving 5.5 hours to Cork this weekend. Shout out to everybody in Cork. Neil's coming over. Any other funny Neil stories? And secondly, finally, Jeff, who is winning the Masters this weekend, my man? The biggest sports story at the minute. Who's going to win it? Brad Couples?
I'm going to say Finau. And the only reason I'm going to say that is because, and I haven't even watched one shot of the Masters, nor will I, right? But I love that kid, because at one point we did a series of football camps in American Samoa, and he traveled along with us to put on a golf exhibition for the Samoan kids, because he's got Samoan heritage. And he's a great, great ambassador for the game and a great ambassador for his culture.
So what you're saying is obviously Rory McIlroy and Shane Lowry first, and then Tony Finau. That's your goal. Light the candle. Any other funny Neil stories? Because you got to imagine, we're like last week we're at a theater, but this week we're in a pub and it's more condensed and it's going to be more like, oh. Any
Now, I can't. Neil's my guy. I can't bust him up now.
There has to be something. There has to be
I
something.
can't. I told you. I'm not telling stories. Mike, remember, this is there's a code. There's a code of ethics.
The big time. I said about Fitz's beard last week. So
what did he say?
It got a good reaction. So I'm just saying, if there is something funny that we can say, I'm up for it. But a good crack in Belfast. Looking forward to having you over here soon enough as well, man. Good to chat with him, and sort of good to have everything just sort of coming back again. Obviously, the draft's in a few weeks. Are you on Inside the Huddle soon? Do you know? Is
yeah, we're going to do a couple shows, pre-draft shows. I think Phoebe's going to join us, and it'll be fun because, you know, like I say, the draft is huge to me. I mean, we didn't even scratch the surface of the offensive players, and you know, there's so many receivers in this draft is really deep. I mean, a really deep receiver crew, offensive linemen with tackles we talked about. There's two inside guys that I think are good enough to go in the first round. I don't think they'll go in the first round, but I think they're good enough. And then watch out, Mike, because this is a loaded, loaded group of defensive linemen.
I look forward to hearing that. We will link it up whenever it comes out, and we'll have you back next week as well. If Phoebe's in this podcast, you got to bring some snacks, man. And I'll leave it at that. Back next week, we're going to get Ollie Hodgkins into this podcast. Ollie, if you're listening to this, my bad. I've just been up to the Reynolds at the minute, getting all this stuff sorted out. But appreciate everyone listening, Jeff. Appreciate you, man. You're a busy man at the minute. And I had some Wi-Fi issues, so appreciate your patience. Any final words, apart from Rory winning the Masters?
Join us next week. We're going to talk about the defensive side of the draft. And then, you know, hopefully we'll by that time, have locked down what we're doing on draft day. So, this is Jeff Reinbold, Michael McQuaid for the Jeff Reinbold Show. Aloha.
And he hasn't mentioned the people's draft yet. I completely forgot about it. Leave it with me.